There are a lot of halachic issues regarding the Kotel. And especially today, I don't know if you heard what's going on here in Israel. You know, the High Court of Israel has granted a certain area designated for the reform, blah, blah, blah. So I'm not interested in the politics much. But what I am interested in are some of the halachic issues with regard to the Kotel. Now, before I mention to you some of those issues, you know, I can give you a whole list. But before we do that, what I really want to do it first is if you take a look at your page one, and on the top right, you'll see a little bit of a diagram. And a look at this diagram will more or less give you the crux of the issue in a nutshell. What you see in your diagram are two boxes. A wider one, the outside box, and the inner box. They're indicated by those black lines. They really look like plans that my wife works with all the time in her architecture. Now, those black lines represent walls. The outer wall is what's called the Harabayit. The inner wall represents the Beis HaMikdash itself. And I think it's appropriate that we discuss this now because we're reading the Parshios of the Mishkan. And you can imagine that a lot of the laws that we derive as far as the Kedusha of this area will reflect the Parshios that we're reading now, starting with Truma all the way to the end of Sefer Shmos. Now, you may notice that the area of the Harabayit is Tafkuf Amma al Tafkuf Amma, which is the equivalent of 500 square Amma. That's an awesome, you know, spans of area. The area within the smaller box is considerably smaller. What you're looking at on the top, which is kind of the north, is the Kodesh Kadoshim surrounded by the Azara. The Azara includes all the area that's a little bit on the south inside this box. So I don't know if you're following me. You know, if I had a pointer, I would show it to you. But let's see if I can do it. Just to make sure we're on the same page. So what we're looking at here, this is the Beis HaMikdash itself. This is the Azara.
And,
sorry, can you see it now? Okay, so this is the wall that surrounds the Beis HaMikdash and closes the Mikdash. This area here is called the Azara. This area here is called the Azara. And this is the Harabayis, anything inside. So now you can appreciate the crux of the problem in a nutshell. What is the Kotel HaMaravi? Is it this wall, which means the wall of Harabayis, or is it this wall? The wall of the Beis HaMikdash. And a different... Yeah, go ahead, Ira.
No, I always thought it was the outer wall.
Okay, but you know what? If you take a look on the bottom of your page one, you're going to see something that's going to floor you and is going to tell you that what we're talking about in the Kotel HaMaravi is not the wall of the Harabayit, but the wall of the Beis HaMikdash itself. And the difference is that if it's the wall of the Beis HaMikdash, you are already standing on the Harabayis. That has tremendous halachic ramifications, which I'll describe as we go along. If, on the other hand, the Kotel HaMaravi is the wall that surrounds the Harabayis, then you're outside the Harabayis.
Right.
And therefore, if you're outside the Harabayis, that gives you a lot more leeway. Although, I have to tell you that a lot of the questions we're going to raise will presume that side, that this wall called the Kotel HaMaravi is the wall of the Harabayis. But nevertheless, the crevices inside the wall, and what do people do in those crevices? What do they put there?
All
the ptakim, which they clear out every month or whatever it is, those ptakim are being placed inside the Harabayis. Why? Because the flat area, right? If you put your hand up on the Kotel, let's assume the Kotel is the Kotel of the Harabayis, So then you haven't entered into the Harabayis yet. You're still standing outside the Harabayis. But once you go into the crevices, then, you know, life becomes a lot more complicated. Now, what I wanted to show you... Yeah, go ahead, Ira.
Don't they know, right? For example, with all the tunnel excavations just outside the wall, don't they know...
Okay, so let me ask you this, Ira. Let me ask you this. What do you do in the following scenario? You've got a conflict between not one statement of Chazal, but two different statements of Chazal that draw you to conclusion, we'll call it X, and the excavations bring you to conclusion Y. Now, I'm not going to ask you for your opinion on that. I'm sure you have an opinion on it.
Where are you going, the excavation?
Yeah, okay. That's why I said, Yechiel, I'm not going to ask you your opinion, because I knew exactly what your answer was going to be. But what we're going to see is...
It's like with medicine. I mean, the you know, in Chazal, we have all sorts of medicine. We know it's nourishkeit, a lot of it.
Okay.
You go with the science that you have.
Okay, so I want to see...
There's not a contradiction to Chazal.
But what I'm asking Yechiel is for you to come to the table with an open mind, okay?
Yes.
And what we want to do is... We want to study the sources. We have no agenda here. This is purely Torah l'shem Torah. And if you take a look at two statements of Chazal on the bottom of your page one, on the right side, you will see the Medrash Rabbah in Parshas Noso. And there's a pasuk in Tanakh that says, Hine ze omed achar koslenu. Obviously, this pasuk is referring to a kosel. We don't know which kosel. And the Medrash comments in the name of Chazal, Ze Kosel Maravi. Okay, I'm going to skip three words for pedagogic reasons. Okay. She'eno Charev Liolam.
Will never be destroyed. Yeah.
Will never be destroyed. Lama? And why will this Western Kotel never be destroyed? Shashchina B'marav. God promises us in a pasuk in Tanakh, it's a divine promise that the Shekhinah will never depart from this Kotel Hamaravi. Okay, now let's go back to the three words that I deliberately skipped. And it says in those three words, Ze Kotel Maravi Shel Harabayis. Isn't that what it says? No, that's not what it says. Right, it doesn't say Shel Harabayis. I was fooling you, but I'm not fooling you because you have the text in front of you. And instead, what it says is Ze Kotel Maravi Shel Beis Hamikdash. This is the western wall of the Beis Hamikdash, concerning which the verse tells us that the Shekhinah will not depart from the western wall of the Beis Hamikdash. Now, if it was only one statement, I would say maybe it's a fluke, maybe it's a question of the text, you know what I mean? But take a look on the left side on the bottom. And this is a medrash of Chazal elsewhere in Shir Hashirim. Hine ze omed al karkaslenu, achar kosel maravi shel, not Harabayis, my friends, but shel beis hamigdash. And lama, she nishba lo hakodesh baruch hu. The word lo here refers to the people of Israel, the nation of Israel. God takes an oath to the nation of Israel. She'eno Charev Liolam, that the western wall of the Beis Hamikdash will never be destroyed. Now, go ahead, Ira.
No, so, but what are the, what I was asking, I'm not even sure, what are the, all those tunnel excavations, which way are they leaning? They're leaning toward the outside wall?
So that's going to be on page 2, okay, which I'll get to in just a minute. Before we turn to page 2 to try to see some of the, as Yechiel would say, the scientific discoveries of the archaeologists, I just want to show you something interesting in the Encyclopedia Talmudit. I'm a big fan of the Encyclopedia Talmudit. And again on page 1, there is an erech called Harabayis. And if you look at the last paragraph in the text itself, before we look at the footnotes, Haktolim Sharom Oso Kayom, and this is the encyclopedia that was written, you know, just a couple of, you know, maybe 2 decades ago. Kosvu Rishonim, now he's calling Rishonim, Shehem Chomas Harabayis. And with that, I breathe a sigh of relief, because again, if the Kotel is the Kotel of the Harabayis, and I'm standing on the outside of the Kotel, meaning I'm standing in the outside of the Harabayis, then I can breathe a sigh of relief, you know, because I'm not, I'm not entering into the Harabayis. Vilachain, and now he derives the halachic conclusions. Mutar liskarev litfila vishtachavoya ad haksolim. How are you, David? I'm allowed to daven all the way up to the Kotel. Af hakotel amaravisharoim viyomenu makom kibbutz Yisrael litfila v'tachanunim v'hu Kotel Harabayis. The place where we gather together to pray at the Kotel is the Kotel of the Harabayis. However, as we began, the statements of Chazal, not just one, but two, indicate that the Kotel Amaravi is not the Kotel Amaravi of the Harabayis, but rather the Kotel Amaravi of the Beis HaMikdash. So if you take a look in the encyclopedia at footnote number 52, I don't know if you can see that, it's very small print, and he quotes on the third line of that footnote, the Ritbaz. The Ritbaz was a great scholar who came to live in Eretz Yisrael, married off his daughter to Rav Kook, and he writes, in the name of some Chacham, that the Kotel Amarvi hu Kotel Ha'azara, which means that you're already on the Harabayis, and you're about to enter into the Beis HaMikdash itself. And it is quoted in the name of the Radbaz, and at the bottom footnote, he quotes the Chaf Pei Vav Pei. The Chaf Pei Vav Pei was called the Crazy Uplacy. The Crazy Uplacy, It's not the Crazy Uplacy. It's the Kaftor of a Ferach. The Crazy Uplacy lived about three centuries ago. His name was Eibeshitz, Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz. But the Kaftor of a Ferach was a Sfaradi who lived about 5.5 centuries ago. His name was Farchi. I had a student named Farchi in my yeshiva, and he traces himself back to the Kaftor Vaferach. The last word, Ferach, is indicative of the name Farchi. So be that as it may, the Farchi of the Kaftor Vaferach is of the opinion that our Kotel Amaravi is the Kotel of the Harabayis and not the Kotel of the Azora. And we're going to see why in a minute as we turn to page 2. But before we turn to page 2, I just want to summarize what we have here in page 1. We have two Kotels. There is the Kotel that surrounds the Beis HaMikdash, and on the Mairav, on the western side, it is the entry into the Azora. And then we have the larger Kotel, which surrounds the Harabayis, and on the western side, we have a Kotel, which, according to Chazal, was never destroyed, dates back to the time of the Tanakh, meaning the time of, let's say, Shlomo HaMelech, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in a divine promise, guarantees us that that Kotel will never be destroyed. Whereas the body of the Encyclopedia Talmudit accepted the approach of the Kaftor Vaferach, namely, that the Kotel Maravi is the Kotel that surrounds the Harabayis. The Ritbaz, on the other hand, and we'll soon see that he based himself on these statements of Chazal, was of the opinion that our Kotel Maravi is the Kotel of the Azora, meaning that it's already located on the Harabayis.
So we know archaeologically that is the case.
So where is the archaeological evidence in the pages that you have in front of you? It's on page 2. Now let me give... Yeah.
It's not possible that the Midrash Rabbah, Shir Shirim, and like both of those that when they say Kotel HaMaariv shall face a Mikdash, that they're kind of referring to the whole thing, like they're not exactly specific, and it could be that they're saying face a Mikdash, but it really means the Arabite.
Yeah. Okay, maybe. And in fact, what you're saying is going to appear on page 3 in the Kafta of Ferach. And on the bottom of page 3, you have the contra view of the Radbaz. Okay? All right, so that I have to get back to you in just a minute. Okay, just a minute, because I'm trying to organize my thoughts. And what I wanted to say to you was the following. On page 2, you have an essay from a book. There's an excerpt from a sefer called Ir HaKodesh VaHamigdosh. Now, let me give you a little bit of background. This sefer was authored by Rabbi Yechiel Michal Tukachinsky. Does the name ring a bell to you?
Yes.
He was... It's strange. I'll tell you who he was, but you and I know him for something else. He's famous. He was a Rosh Yeshiva, and perhaps the Rosh Yeshiva, of the oldest yeshiva in Yerushalayim for Ashkenazim called Eitz Chaim Yeshiva. You can still go to the Shuk in Machne Yehuda, and on your way out of the Shuk, you'll see a sign that says Eitz Chaim Yeshiva. As far as I know, the yeshiva is not functioning today, but that's exactly where it was functioning at the time of the great Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer. Now, when Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer was Rosh Yeshiva in Eitz Chaim, he had Rav Tukachinsky as one of his Ramim, one of his Rosh Yeshiva, and Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, when he passed away, the mantle of leadership of the yeshiva was passed on to Rav Tukachinsky. But for some reason, he's known more famously for two works that really have nothing to do with his main job as Rosh Yeshiva. And those are the Gesher Achayim, which to some extent is the final word on the laws of Avelus. He did a tremendous amount of research on Avelus. And another work which is called Ir HaKodesh VaMikdash. And in that book, he did an awful lot of research to figure out the status of the Kotel HaMaariv. Now keep in mind that Rav Tukachinsky wrote, he authored the Luach. So for example, in the Amic Learning Center, where I spend most of my life these days, right? We, all our minhagim, everything we do is a reflection of the Luach of Rav Tukachinsky. He tells you day by day, through the entire 365 days, exactly how we in Yerushalayim for the Ashkenazim should be Nohig. Oh, that's just a little bit of background. In this piece called HaKotel HaMaariv, which is page 2, he goes through all the dimensions of the Kotel. And he says that what you're looking at when you go to the Kotel is 18 meters high. Okay? And he says that although historically, you know, what you saw was 18 meters, he says the Arabs actually added more to the Kotel, and it's higher.
See the different style stones.
But he says basically that the Kotel is made up of 3 different layers. He says the bottom layer, which in Hebrew is called the Nidbach, I don't know if you know that word, so you should learn that word, Nidbach. That is made up of stones that date back to the period of David and Shlomo. Now we're beginning to see, you know, this pasuk of, what was the pasuk again? I'm sorry, I forgot it. Of, Hinei ze omed achar kotlenu, which is a pasuk that was authored by Shlomo HaMelech in Shir HaShirim. And then he says that the second layer, which is made up of 4 different layers, that goes back to the period of Bayit Sheni. And finally, On the top layer, we're talking about a much later period of time after Bayit Sheni, and that refers to a period called the Tkufa of Andrinos. But the real surprise here, at least to me, was that, and this you'll see in the second paragraph, that that's only the part of the Kotel that we see. There's a Kotel that's underground, which is even taller than the Kotel above ground, and it has 19 layers to it. So again, what I'm just trying to point out is that the archaeological evidence indicates that we're only seeing a very, let's say, less than 50% of the Kotel. Now, I don't want to get into the politics here, but it has to do with Moshe Dayan, may he rest in peace, but he gave the control over the Kotel and the Harbayis to the Arabs, and as a result, this very, you know, the amount of archaeological digging that we're capable of doing is somewhat limited. You know, our hands are to somewhat tied behind our back. But if you take a look, he says the Orech HaKotel, he says, Mitzafon L'Dorom, HaChelik Asher Olav Novo Kayom Bizmanenu, at least, you know, what we can approach today, L'Shtatech L'Fonov, is basically 28 meters. That's the, I guess you'd say, the width of the Kotel. Okay, that's one thing. Then I wanted to point out to you, and this is, we're going to fast forward to paragraph Hey, which you'll see is underlined on the right side. He says, Avanim rabot ve'akotel achulot oshvurot mipigei achurban u'mishinei hazmanim. He says that a heck of a lot of the stones of the Kotel were either destroyed by the enemies or by the vicissitudes of time. And therefore he says that Bioter Avanim Shebishurot Bet Gimel Milamala Me'oretz. He says, as you go higher and higher above ground, there's more and more destruction. There's a lot less destruction below the ground or in the lower levels. Now, in the footnotes, which you'll see on the bottom right, he quotes all sorts of archaeological evidence to derive the following conclusion, which you'll see in the text on the top left, and that is that Gedolei Yisrael, throughout the generations, pikpiku, they had doubts, v'chavu datam, and they expressed their opinion that the Kotel that we see today is the Kotel of the Azara, which basically means the Kotel of the Beis HaMikdash. We're already deep into the Harbayis. And amongst those people, he quotes the Radbaz. The Radbaz lived about 5 centuries ago. And he quotes the Chayodim who lived approximately 150 years ago. But the Chayodim himself wrote a work called Shari Tzedek Mishpatei Haaretz. And he says that even in our tkufa, in our period, again, this is Tukhachinsky, he died about 40 years ago, or maybe even less. He writes, Eze Gaonim, there are a whole bunch of Gaonim, amongst them is Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer. Now, I don't know if you know this, Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer was one of the founders of what we call modern religious Zionism. The Mizrahi movement largely based itself in terms of its rabbinic backbone on Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer. And he quotes a number of other Gaonim, Rav David Friedman. They believe that this is a major mistake and that the Kotel that we see Eino Modelo Shehume Azara. They don't want to agree to the Radbaz and admit that it's the Kotel of the Azara, but nevertheless they say it's the Kotel of the Chel. Now, even if you hold it's the Kotel of the Chel, which has less Kedusha, okay, let's go back to our diagram on page 1, okay? Okay. Okay, so actually, I'll have to get back to you on this because honestly, my eyes are a little bit incapable of seeing exactly where the chel is. But
what is the chel?
Okay, the chel is part of the Beis Hamikdash. It's just it has less sanctity than the Azorah. And if you give me 5 minutes, we're going to try to define the various levels of Kedusha, beginning from Eretz Yisrael, going all the way up to the Kodesh Kedoshim. 10 different levels. That's going to be on your page 3.
It'll be more exterior to the Kodesh Kedoshim than the other parts. That's all.
Correct. And basically, what Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer and Rav David Hoffman are claiming is that once you are at the Kotel, you are on the Har HaBayis. Albeit not, they're not willing to go as far as the Radbaz, that you've already entered into the area of the Migdash, and you're standing at the entry into the Azorah itself. That far they're not going to go, but nevertheless, they claim that you are already standing on the Har HaBayis. And in our time, the one who accepted this approach, that you're already on the Har HaBayis, is the Ridbaz. Okay, not to confuse the Radbaz with the Ridbaz. The Radbaz, his name was David Ibn Ben Zimra, he lived 5 centuries ago. He was almost a contemporary of the Kafta of Aferach of Farchi. Whereas the Ridbaz lived at the time of the Binyan Ariel, well, even after the Binyan Ariel, he lived about 150 years ago. And he was so convinced that we have to be very careful here. Shelo rotzo lageshes el hakotel. He didn't want to go up to the Kotel. Again, he was this great lover of Eretz Yisrael, and yet he would not go up to the Kotel. Bechashesho, he was afraid, shu Kotel hazara. And if you want to see, oh, okay, that's not in these pages here, but Aval Kvar Nisbarer Limidai, says Rav Tukhachinsky, we already have clear-cut evidence against these approaches. V'nira b'chush, and anyone who has any sense of reality knows and recognizes Shehu Yisod Chomas Harabayis, that the Kotel is the Kotel of the Harabayis. Now, there was a bit. Yeah.
Isn't the Avanesh Sia the rock in the center of the mosque? And the Avanesh Sia was, that's where the Aron stood on top of the Avanesh Sia.
And that's the Kodesh Kodashim.
The Kodesh Kodashim. And we work outwards from there.
Correct. Right? Now the question is, where is the Kotel in reference, in proximity to the Evan Shasia? Are we talking
southeast?
No, but I'm asking, what I'm asking is how far of a distance is it? I don't know. But if it's, yeah, you could measure it, but I'm just saying if it's not far enough, then keep in mind that from the outside of the Beis HaMikdash to the outside of the Har HaBayis is 500 amos. Now, again, I'm not saying I'm an expert at this, but it's hard for me to believe that the measurement of distance from the Evan Shasia in the Misgat Omer to the Kotel HaMaravi is 500 amos. Right. That's hard for me to believe. In any event, Rav Tukhachinsky is going to accept the opinion of the Kafta of Aferach, namely that the Kotel is the Kotel of the Har HaBayis.
There's another proof. At the south end, we have the stairs leading up to the base of Mikdash. Those are the, I mean, I've heard that those stairs that they've now excavated at the south end, where that park is at the south, if the excavation is there, and you have the stairs going up, and they just go up into the wall now, where that surrounds the mosque. Those are stairs that we read about as the stairs of the base of Mikdash. So, and then the Kotel HaMaravi is to the west and north of those stairs.
Okay.
So we have. have various markers that should tell us, because we know the dimensions of the base of Mikdash, do we not?
Yes. But the final word here seems to be the word of the Kaftim of Ferach from 5+ centuries ago, that's codified here in the Sefer Ir HaKodesh V'HaMikdash of Rav Tukhachinsky. So I'm just pointing out that although the final word and all of that discussion from now on is going to be based on Rav Tukhachinsky, who's standing on the shoulders of the Kaftim of Ferach and all the other evidence that they have, you should know that historically this was a major issue, and there were Gedolim who didn't go up to the Kotel because they felt that the Kotel was already on the Har HaBayis. That's something that you should be aware of. And again, there's a lot of research. I'm just skimming, touching the surface here. So give me a few minutes to develop an idea that I wanted to share with you today. He says in the bottom left, Gilui HaKotel Zman Rav Achar HaChurban Nishar HaKotel Maravi Megule V'Nireh. He says the Kotel Maravi was left from the time of the Churban and everyone could see it. But he says that there were periods of time later on in which our enemies would cover the Kotel Maravi and bury it under sand and under rocks, and therefore you weren't able to see it. And he writes that for Be'erech Shlosh Me'ot Shanim, he says for as long as 300 years, Kol HaKotel Hayah Mechusa Bi'afar, the entire Kotel was underground, was covered. And there was a famous traveler who wrote many different descriptions of his travels called Rabbi Yomin Mitoledo, and he writes that Tayarim Sha'achrov, Lois Kiru, Me'akotam Avivisifrayim, Begroseim, when they were traveling through the land of Palestine, they did not mention a word about the Kotel. And the reason for that is they lived during that period of 3 centuries in which the Kotel was completely submerged. However, he writes, Minshnas Resh Pei Gimel, Matsina Kvar Bin Michtav Nidpas Bechoveret Yushalayim, Kapi Afares, I will, you know, what's the word? Spread my arms out, Lerum Shamayim, Neged Kotel Amaravi, which seems to indicate that already at that point, okay, I'll tell you exactly what that year is. Let me just make a quick calculation. Kufresh is 283 plus 1240. We're talking in the year 1523. So already in the year 1523, There is testimony that they saw and they prayed at the Kotel. Now we turn to page 3, where you have the Kaftim of Ferach. The Kaftim of Ferach tells you the exact measurements of the Har HaBayit. He tells you which gates would lead you into the Har HaBayit. There was the Shar Shoshan to the east. There was the Shar Chulda to the south. There was the Shar I think it says Terry. I don't know, it's hard for me to see it. I'm sorry, I apologize. I need really a magnifying glass. And to the Mairov in the west, there was a Shar called Kifunus. He writes that the Azora was not located in the middle of the Arbayis, but rather it was towards the south. And then, after going through all this research, he writes on the top left, Mikolze Yirosh Kimashan Aroim Hayom. So again, he was already visiting the Kotel about 5 centuries ago. Bismanenu Zemeak Tolim Aobni by Elohim Kotlim Michomas Har Habayis. And again, the Radbaz, who was a contemporary, would not agree with this statement. He's the author of the Tshuva on the bottom of your page. But the Kaftim of Ferach testifies that he has no doubt that the Kotel of today is the Kotel of the Har HaBayit. The Radbaz disagrees. I don't know if he's at all aware of the Kaftim of Ferach, but he is of the opinion that we're talking about the Kotel of the Azora itself. Now, the question is, what does the Kaftim of Ferach do with the two midrashim that say explicitly that the Kotel Maravi that lasted with this divine promise is the Kotel of the Beis Hamikdash. So for that we go back to Rav Tkachinsky. That's on page 2. And he writes the following. I'm just trying to find it. I know I saw it, but now of course I can't find it. So you'll look for this, but I just have a summary of what he says. He tells us that the Kotel is, and this is sort of like what Ira was saying before, is the remnants of Chatzar Beis HaMikdash. Chatzar Beis HaMikdash. Now, let's explain. The word Chatzar usually means an outdoor area, a yard, or I don't know what word you would use. If it's in the front, it's the front yard, in the back, it's the backyard, but that's called a Chatzar. Now, the Beis HaMikdash also has a Chatzar, an outdoor yard. What's that called? That's called the Har HaBayis. So that when the Medrash says that the Kotel Maravi is the Kotel Maravi of the Beis HaMikdash, says Rav Tkachinsky, what those Midrash mean, it's the Kotel Maravi of the Chatzar Beis HaMikdash.
Which is the
Har HaBayis. Okay, now we get to the pure halachic element in our discussion, and we look at the Mishnah in Kelim on the top of page 4. Eser Kedusha, say. The Mishnah delineates 10 levels of Kedusha that begin with the bottom, and we climb the ladder getting more and more intense. The lowest level of the 10 levels is called Eretz Yisrael. Why is the land of Israel sanctified? How does that sanctity express itself in halachic terms? That sets it up as a singular, unique land. Shemeviyim imenu ha-omer ha-bikurim u'shtei alechem. I mean, there are two girsos in the Mishnah. Some girsos leave out the word bikurim, but what's absolutely clear is omer and shtei halechem. So that means when they brought the Omer on the 16th of Nisan, or the Shtei Lechem on the 6th of Sivan, on Chag HaShavuos, Chag HaBikurim, they could only bring grain that grew in Eretz Yisrael. In the case of the Omer, we're talking about barley. In the case of the Shtei Lechem, we're talking about wheat. The next level of Kedusha is what's called the walled cities. Arim, Ayoros, Hamukafos, Choma. That's going to be relevant next month when we talk about Purim. Now, how does the... I'm not asking a philosophical question here, why these cities are more sanctified than other cities. I have no doubt it has to do with security against our enemies. But be that as may, how does it express itself halachically? Shemeshalchin mitochan mitzorayim. Now, mitzorayim are tmeim, but on a slightly lower level. What do I mean? It's a tumah, but it's not called tumah yotzeis migufa. Like, for example, a nida or a zava, that's called tumah yotzeis migufa. And that's a more severe level of tumah. And if you take a look, we get to the next level of Kedusha, which is Lifnim Min HaChoma. What does it mean, Lifnim Min HaChoma? Lifnim Min HaChoma, says Rashi, Chomas Yerushalayim. So again, we started in Eretz Yisrael. We then moved up the ladder to Arim HaMukafos Choma. Now we're entering into Yerushalayim. Let's call it the old city. I don't know if that's an accurate description, but you're already entered into the walls of Yerushalayim. And what's the Kedusha level there? Ochlim Sham, Kodshim Kalim, Umaisa Sheni. You're not allowed to eat Kodshim Kalim or Maisa Sheni anywhere in Eretz Yisrael until you enter into Yerushalayim. What's the next level of Kedusha? Har HaBayis, Mekudesh Mimenu. So again, Yerushalayim encompasses more than the Har HaBayis. Now we enter into the Har HaBayis. She'ein zavin v'zavos nidos v'yoldos nichnasim l'sham. Okay, now if we're on the Har HaBayis already, then we're talking about tmeim that are not allowed to enter into the Har HaBayis. Now, today you may know that there are people who go into the Har HaBayis. Maybe they're tovel b'mikvah, and then you have to know what the status of a zav after he counts Zayin Nikiyim or Nida, and they go to mikvah. I mean, for that you have to know Taurus a little bit. Would they be allowed to enter into the Har HaBayis? But again, there are all sorts of conditions that have to be met. Now, after we get to the Har HaBayis, we're about to enter into the first level, the lowest level of Kedusha of Mikdash, that's called the Chel. And Ein Goyim Utmei Meis Nichnasim L'Sham. This is already a different level of Tumah that is more severe. And the Ezra's Nashim Kedusha ain't fine, and we go up and up and up until we get to the Kodesh HaKadosh. So now, let's go back to our original question. What is the Kotel HaMaravi? If the Kotel HaMaravi is the Kotel of the Beis HaMikdash itself, let's go with the opinion of the just give me one second to clear my brain, the opinion of, I'm so sorry, of Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, then we're already about to enter into the Chel, and therefore, since we're standing on our bias when we stand in the Kotel, Zavim, Zavos, Nidos, Vyodos are not allowed to go up to the Kotel, because when you go up to the Kotel, you're already on the Har HaBayis. If on the other hand we take the opinion of the Kafta V'Ferach, Rav Farchi, together with the opinion of Rav Tukachinsky, then we're about to enter into the Har HaBayis at the Kotel, but we're not in the Har HaBayis. And if we're not in the Har HaBayis, then there's no problem for Zavim, Zavos, Nidos, and Yoldos to go up to the Kotel. Therefore, we can summarize that according to those poskim, and that represents 99% of the poskim, who accept the opinion, not of the Radbaz and the Ridbaz, but rather the opinion of the Ir HaKodesh VaMikdash, then even those who are Tamei in Tumah Yotzis Migufo, this whole list of Tmeim, are allowed to go up to the Kotel, and they will rely on the Kafta V'Ferach and the research of the Ir HaKodesh VaMikdash of Rav Tukachinsky. This opinion is also adopted by the Avnei Nezer and ultimately by Rav Avadya Yosef. So again, going up to the Kotel is not a problem according to all those poskim, even for those Tmeim that we discussed before. Now, what I want to discuss with you is, are you allowed to put, what do they call it, kvitlach? Are you familiar with that word? Right, kvitlach into the Kotel, as tons of people do. Now the answer seems to be the following. We know that you're not allowed to enter into the Har HaBayis bitumah, but I'm standing, my feet are on the ground outside the Kotel, so I'm not in the Har HaBayis, but my fingers are now going into the crevices in order to place these kvitlach in. So for that, we have to turn to page 4 in the middle of the page, and that's a sugya in Masechet Zvachim, which is called Bia B'miktas. Bia B'miktas means, what happens if only part of my body enters into the Har HaBayis? The majority of my body is outside the Har HaBayis, but my fingers are now entering into the Har HaBayis. That's called Bia B'miktas. And if you take a look at the final conclusion of the sugya, Reish Lakish says, Tamei Sheikhnis Yado Lifnim Lokef. If Tamei puts his hand inside the Har HaBayis, he'll get Malkus for it. That means he violated Issa Doraisa. And the Gemara concludes that Bia b'miktas shmei Bia. Now there's a machlokas here between the Rambam and the Raivid, which you'll see in Hilchas Bias Migdash Perek Gimel, Halachi Yud Zayin. And the Rambam says Yira lishein loke ela, that you don't get malchus. Chein tami shichnis yadlo migdash makin oso makas mardus. So that means that according to the Rambam, it would seem that Bia b'miktas shmei Bia is only an Iser Derabbanon. There is a long Hasaga of the Raivid, in which the Raivid disagrees with the Rambam, and he holds that Bia b'miktas shmei Bia d'oraisa. And there's a long discussion here in the Kesef Mishnah in Bias Migdash Perek Gimel, and he writes that according to Reish Lakish, Tomei Shiknis Yodol Lifnim Loke, the Bia b'miktas shmei Bia l'inyan Malkus. Whereas the Rambam holds that, and the Raivid holds that we paskin that Bia b'miktas shmei Bia as an Issa d'oraisa. Tomei can't even put his hand into that place. Whereas the Rambam holds it's only an Issa d'rabbanan. But hey, what's the difference? Call it an Issa d'oraisa, call it an Issa d'rabbanan. Do you want to write a kvittel and stuff it into the kotel and your Tomei, and you want to violate an Issa d'rabbanan according to the Rambam, which I'm not guaranteed that we paskin like the Rambam? So let's try to see if we can find some sort of justification to this minhag of putting kvitloch into the kotel. There's a gadol b'Yisrael who came to Yerushalayim in the year Tafresh Chaf Tes, which is approximately 40 years ago. Did I get that right? Chaf? Yeah. His name was Yeshua Mashal Gelbstein, and he wrote a book called the Avir Yaakov, which you'll see on page 5. I don't know if you printed page 5. And in this tshuva of the Avir Yaakov, he writes that one should not place any sort of a finger inside the crevices of the kotel, because then he's already entered into the Arabayis. And he writes that he shared this insight with the Maril Diskin. Now the Maril Diskin, you should know, was the Rav in Brisk. He was the last Rav in Brisk. And he came on Aliyat Eretz Yisrael. Right near here where I'm sitting, there's a Diskin orphanage. It's a famous monument, almost a landmark in Yerushalayim. And the Maril Diskin agreed with the position of the Avir Yaakov that a Tomei is not allowed to put his hand or his finger inside the crevices of the kotel. So we still have not gotten to the point where we can justify this minhag of putting kvitloch in the kotel. The one who was matir it was the Sukkot Shomer, the Avnei Nezer. And he's quoted on page 6 by Rav Sternbach, Rav Moshe Sternbach, who's a neighbor, lives 5 minutes from here in Har Nof. And he's the Gravid of the Bezdin of the Eidah Haredis. He wrote a very, very famous work called the Moadim Uzmanim. And he says in the name of the Avnei Nezer that the Harabayis is Kodesh, but the walls of the Harabayis are not Kodesh. And we have to understand why, but be that as it may, for a moment, let's just see what the implications. If the walls of the Harabayis are not Kodesh, then there's no Iser to put your hand into the Kotel. And what we're saying is that although the wall, the western wall, surrounds the Harabais, it itself is not on the Harabais. It's outside the Harabais. Now, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, in his Tshuvas, which you'll see on page 8, Minchas Shlomo, says that according to the Rambam, the Iser Bias Mikdash is only Derabbanon. And Rabbanan only instituted this gzera when you could just pass into the Harabayis. In other words, it's Roy Lebias Gufo. But if you're standing on the outside of a wall, so Rabosai, again, let's just summarize. Are we allowed to go up to the Kotel even though it's Tmeim? The answer is yes. We're going to rely on all those poskim who maintain that the Kotel is the wall of the Harabayis. So we're not yet in the Harabayis. Question number two. Are we allowed to put our fingers into the crevices of the Harabayis? And here we have three different views. We have one view of the Abir Yaakov, and he's of the opinion that it's Osir, and he quotes as his Tana de Mesayale, the Maril Diskin. We have the second opinion that it's Mutter. That's the opinion of the Sukkotch of the Abdinezer. He's quoted by Rav Moshe Sternbach in his Moedim Uzmanim. The reason why the Abdinezer was Mekil is because he was of the opinion that the Kotel is not within the Harabayis, but rather it's outside the Harabayis. And for that, again, we need a lot of research. And finally, we have the opinion of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in his Mincha Shlomo. He holds that we pass like the Rambam, that Bias Mixas is only the Rabbanon, and the Rabbanon only made that Gzera when they were afraid that if you put your hand in, eventually your whole body is going to go in. But if you're standing on the outside of a wall, and you're just putting your fingers into the crevices of the wall, then there's no Iser at all, because we're not afraid that you will go into the wall. But now, Rabosai, if you could have page 9 up on the screen, we're going to take a look at a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. And here I want to ask the following question. Let's assume that the Kotel dates back to the time of Bayis Rishon. Okay? And we've seen evidence to that effect. Therefore, the Kotel has a certain level of sanctity. It's Hegdesh. Shlomo HaMelech built that Kotel, well, again, whichever layers of the gigantic Kotel he built, the lower levels, and there was a Kedusha to it. What is the basis for any sort of heter of benefiting from the Kotel? Let me explain what I mean. Supposing you decide that you want to pick out one of the stones of the Kotel and take it home as a souvenir, or even to pull out grass that grows from the Kotel. I'll even go a step further. It's a very hot summer day, and you're enjoying the shade from the sun of the Kotel. And so forth and so on. You can lean against the Kotel. If, let's say, you know your balance is a little bit shaky. Or if, let's say, your back is hurting you because you've been standing at the Kotel for, you know, I don't know, a half hour, so you want to lean up against the Kotel. Plenty of people will take a photograph of them, have someone take a photograph, now you can do it selfie, right, of yourself at the Kotel, while you're leaning on the Kotel, your back is to the wall. So the question here that I want to raise is, would there be a din of me'ila, which means enjoying the benefit from an object which was sanctified and has the status of Hegdesh to it? And again, in all those many, many different kinds of cases that people are makil, what would be the basis for that kula? And here we see a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah on Daf, what daf is it? You have page 9?
Nun days?
Okay. So the Gemara on Nun days in Avodah Zarah tells us that at the time of the Greeks, they started defiling the Beis HaMikdash. In fact, the Gemara tells us something very interesting about the Beis Chashmonai, that they would take the Avnei HaMizbeach and they would hide it. Gniza. But the language of the Braisa is Sheshiktsu Anshei Yavan. The word Shikutz represents some sort of Avodah Zarah. And when the Yavanim took the stones of the Beis HaMikdash and they dedicated to Avodah Zarah, Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa quotes a pasuk, Baluba pritzim v'chileluha. Please emphasize that word, chileluha. Chileluha means to be machalal hegdesh. Okay, I'm going to try not to be distracted because I have a joke to tell you, but we'll leave it at. So what's going on over here? There should be me'ilah from the stones, but if the pritzim came and they were mechalal it, as indicated by Rav Tukachinsky in the article that we saw earlier, Ir HaMikdash, we saw that during different periods of time, the Goyim actually took over the Har HaBayis, they took over the Kotel, and they were machalal it. So then we shouldn't have any problem whatsoever of having Hana and benefiting from the Kotel. Now I want you to hold on to your seats for a moment. The Moedim Uzmanim was authored by Rav Moshe Sternbach, as we mentioned earlier. And he serves as the Gravid of the Badatz, which is the Eid of Haredis. He does not wear a kippah sruga, and I can promise you that he does not celebrate Yom HaTzmaut. Nevertheless, he claims in the Sefer Moedim Uzmanim that why is it that the Gemara in Avodah Zarah needs this new principle, Bo Pritzim Chalalua, to explain why they were Mechalel the Hegdesh? He says, because the normal halacha of chilul of kedusha, which applies when a guy takes away hegdesh, doesn't apply to mechuba lekarka. Right, they're removable objects that are not attached to the ground, and then you have something like the mizbeach, which is mechuba lekarka. When the Gemara says that the Greeks were mafkia, they were mechal the kedusha of the mizbeach, because bo goyim v'chilalua, bo priestim v'chilalua, the Gemara needs a new halacha that could apply to the avonim of the mizbeach insofar as they are mechubaros lakarka. This halacha, according to Rav Sternbach, is not because of a permanent chilul, when you actually desecrate something, but rather it's a result of the control that the goyim have over the Har HaBayis and the Mokom HaMikdash. It's an issue of sovereign control. That's this new halacha. The other halacha of classic me'ila means that you enjoy the benefit of it. Right, if I take Hegdesh and I take it for my own purposes and I enjoy it, like let's say you are Magdish a piece of cloth and I wear it, that's the classical case of Chilul Hegdesh and Me'ilah, but that doesn't apply to Mechuba Lekarka. This new halacha Mechuba Lekarka is because the Goyim took over the land and they control the land. Comes along Rav Sternbach and he says the following. Afilu nomer shamigdash yatzal chulin bebias pirtze pritze akum. That's a separate halacha that applies only when the mikdash is bishlitas hapritzim. It's under the sovereign control. Ach barega, and I want you to tell me when this rega took place. Shechazar habayis l'shlitas Yisrael. Right? What? When was that, Rabbi Osai? At the time of the Six-Day War, right? So we all remember that time period. He says, from that period and on, Hareyu Omed B'Kedushasa. It's unbelievable that Rav Sternbach is talking about the Shlita of Yisrael over the Harabayis as a halachic recognized entity.
Wow, it's incredible.
That's why I said, hold on to your seats. I was amazed at this. But it comes out that according to Rav Sternbach, what we end up with is a Chumrah, because now the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, of Har Habayis, of the Beis HaMikdash is all intact, despite the fact that at one point in time it was completely desecrated by Bo, priests in Vechelelua, but that's because they had political sovereignty over the area. Now that we have political sovereignty over the area, it goes back to its original state of Kedusha, because it's not like classical Me'ila, which completely undermines the Hegdesh and it's irreversible. This is a reversible process. And therefore, says Rav Sternbach, which you can see on page 6, Ach shebavonoseinu harabim hasholtim bo hayom, even though we're not happy with the fact that the Zionist entity has political sovereignty over the area, she'enam akirim godol kedushas hamakom, and that's because the Supreme Court of Israel is not interested in anything other than democracy, she'bershusam alafim nichnasim afilu lekodesh kadoshim, he says that the state and the political Zionist entity allows thousands of people to enter into the Kodesh Kadoshim, which we wouldn't be allowed to do, and certainly not allow Arabs to go up there. Mikomakom lo meshaktsim chas v'sholom avnei hakosel laharsam, they are not destroying chas v'sholom the stones of the Kotel, and therefore the chilul is reversed, and therefore we have to be machmir, he says, to assume that the Kotel has its original Kedusha, and therefore he says, Osur lehenos mehavonim, we cannot derive any benefit from the stones of the Kotel.
Oh my goodness.
And therefore,
you can't touch them, you can't lean on them, you can't stand in the shade.
You can't pull out grass from the Kotel, because that's also part of the Kotel. And therefore, I want to point out to you that on page 10, Rav Moshe Feinstein, in his Tshuvas in the Igros Moshe, says, Lo nischalu avnei hakotel amaravim kedushasam. There is no chilul with regard to the stones of the Kotel. And therefore the halacha of Bo, priests of Chilu, doesn't apply. And therefore he says, what a terrible avera it is to take little pebbles from the Kotel as a mazkeret, as some sort of a souvenir. He says, not only do you violate the Isur Me'ilah if you take stones from the Kotel, and I know people who display these little stones, but above and beyond that, he violates an Isur of Lo Sasun Kein L'Hashem Elokeichem, which means you're not allowed to destroy anything that's Kodesh. And that applies to a person who chips off an Evan from the Heichel, from the Mizbeah, from the Azores, or for that matter, even for the Kotel.
This is incredible.
It's mamish incredible. The people don't know this. That if the Kotel Amaravi has the status of Hegdesh, they were not allowed to be Nene from the Kotel Amaravi. And therefore, if you'll take a look for
Where do we make the jump? If it has the status of Hegdesh now since 67, that you can't derive any benefit. Back in the days of Beis HaMikdash, we drew lots of benefit from it. So why should we not derive benefit now?
Well, it depends what you mean by deriving benefit. If it's for the sake of the mitzvah and the avoda, that's one thing. But how much more so during the time the Mikdash stood, you weren't allowed to have any personal benefit from any part of the coat, any part of the Beis HaMikdash, because it had a din of Hegdesh. So what I want to show you here is is the following. He says, just 1 second. Oh, I think I got the right page. Because I printed out the pages. I don't know how to look at you and at the screen at the same time. I probably could do it, but I just don't know the technology. But I have it printed out. And it says here the following.
Wait, what page are we on? What page?
We're now on page 11, which is called the Sharei Tzion. Okay, the Gates of Zion. And he writes that those who try to take out grass, or as the Brits call them, grass, from the Kotel, and they want it as a skula, he says that's absolutely forbidden. And he quotes Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld to support his position. And therefore he says that he wrote a question to Rav Avigdor Nevinsal Shlita, who is the rabbi, the chief rabbi of the Old City. And he wrote a similar question to Rav Shlomo Amar, who until recently was the Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel. And they basically all agreed to that position, that the Kotel has a very serious status in Halacha. Let me just read to you the language. There's so much here to read, but he writes... he writes that if a poel, if a worker, a laborer, comes to do avoda, and he wants to strengthen any of the stones of the Kotel, then there are very, very strict laws that he goes into detail. It's not for us now to describe how and under what conditions they would be allowed to fix the stones of the Kotel. Now, in the same tshuva, but here on page 8, he seems to be machmir about not only ripping things off the Kotel, but he says, litlos ulaniach dvarim al zizim. Now, I don't know how to say the word zizim in English, but you'll help me here. Yeah, what are those little ledges? Is that a good word, ledge? Like, no, this must...
There are ledges there with the...
You know what I mean? You know where the birds land?
Birds land, yeah.
So apparently there are some that are within arm's reach. I have to go back to the Kotel and check this out.
They're pretty high up.
So he says, in any event, listen to the theory of it. He says, also litlos chafotzim al azizim. You know, if there's anything that comes out of the Kotel, you're not allowed to use that to place things down.
They put those little spikes on there to discourage the doves from landing there and doing their business all over you.
Okay, but we might want to discourage them from landing there because they'll be nene from Hegdesh. Anyway, the summary of what I wanted to get out of this whole thing is that there are a number of issues with regard to the Kotel, the most fundamental of which is, okay, so then we have to know whether the Kotel is the Kotel of the Migdash, the Azor, the Chel, whether it's the Kotel of the Harbayis. Assuming that we pass against the Kotel of Harbayis, we can go to the Kotel. It's a makom in which we assemble for tefillah, and on Rosh Hashanah we'll blow the shofar at the Kotel, and we will dance in front of the Kotel, and all that area is considered outside the Harbayis. The problem is that there are some poskim who will claim that the Kotel itself is on the Har HaBayis, which means that we shouldn't be sticking our fingers into the crevices because that's called Bia B'miktas. Other poskim want to be lenient as far as Fitloch because they claim that we pass like the Rabbanan, that Bia B'miktas is only the Rabbanan, and this the Rabbanan won't apply in the case of the Kotel. And lastly, we had a whole long discussion about whether the status of the Kotel is Chilul Kodesh because of all those, you know, different nations that were Bo, Pritz, and Chalua? Or do we say no, that Bo, Pritz, and Chalua is only a reflection of the sovereign rulership of those nations, but now that the sovereignty has returned, again, you have to know what the status of the Harbais itself is, but I'm talking at least in terms of the Kotel, to Jewish hands, and no one's being mechal that Kedusha, then the original Kedusha is reinstated, and we cannot lean on the Kotel, we cannot perhaps enjoy the shade of the Kotel. That has to be taken under advisement as a separate topic in terms of shade, but certainly not to take any stones from the Kotel. That would be a ghastly and very very profound violation of the Kedushas HaKotel. Any questions before we go? Go ahead, Dave.
So the thing is, though, but after the Six-Day War, so the Israeli government gave a walk of like the shlita of the Har Habayis. They were digging away into all kinds of souls. So to say this in our hands, it's not actually true.
So that's why, David, I want to make the following distinction. And again, I would have to go through this entire tshuva of the Shaar Tzion. But my distinction is the following. The Har HaBayis might possibly, as you argue, come under this halacha of Ubo Pritzim V'Chaluha. But the Kotel itself does not.
No, that's true.
So that's why I would like to suggest that, you know, Rav Sternbach's Chumrah, which is based on this concept that the Kotel has now come back to our control, that Chumrah, that Ubo, Priest of Chalua, no longer applies to the Kotel, and that Chilul is now reversed, and the Kegdesh status of the Kotel is reinstated. Therefore, all the halachas that we described about benefiting from the Kotel itself are in place. And that's why, you know, there are people who don't want to come close to the Kotel because they think you have to be marchik at least 11 amos from the Kotel because they feel that that's the Kotel is the Kotel of the Mikdash and they don't want to enter into the Har HaBayis. There are people who will come a little bit closer to the Kotel, but they don't want to come too close because they're afraid they might benefit from the Kotel. And then we have us guys, let's say, you know, the Amcha, we go all the way up to the Kotel, but even so, I don't think our discussion of today, lunchtime for you and supper time for me, is totally theoretical. I think there are practical repercussions to what we discussed here. And we have to treat the Kotel with a certain serious attitude.
Does anyone ask him, like, are there groups of people that don't go at all?
Yes, absolutely. And those who go from those groups, who are a little bit more lenient, will not go up to the Kotel. I'll be honest with you, I myself get very scared about going up to the Kotel. The only thing is that there's a part of the Kotel to the left that's, you know, roofed. Is that a word? It's under a roof. And if you've ever been to the Kotel on a Friday night, that's where you want to be. They have a minyan there, which is unbelievable. There's a shliach tzibur. I'm tipping you off on a secret if you don't know it. But if you're ever at the Kotel on Friday night, that's where you should find yourself. They have a shliach tzibur there who is unbelievable. He's a yachid b'mino, and it's the amcha there, the kibbutz goliaths over there of chassidim and yushalmis and yeshiva bachrim and who knows what is. It's something unreal, and it doesn't go too late, but there's a lot of singing, and it's ma'od meragesh. You know, last night I was at a wedding. It was also kind of kibbutz goliaths. There were Torontonians there were Israelis there were some people from Brooklyn, and then there was the Ethiopian element, and that was
you had the Posen wedding.
No, this is the Ostrow wedding, Mickey Ostrow.
Ostrow. Thank you.